Welcome to The Superhuman Life. I'm your host, Frank Rich, and this is the only podcast in the world that is dedicated to helping men level up in the five key areas of life. Each week, we bring you real and raw conversations with the world's leading experts in faith, fitness, finance, family, and freedom to provide you with real actionable tools to break limiting beliefs, take action, and shatter the glass ceiling on your life's potential. So jump on board and join me on this journey as we dive into today's conversation and unlock the keys to you becoming the man you were born to be and creating your own superhuman life. What is going on, everybody? Welcome back this week to another amazing, guys, and very, very exciting episode of The Superhuman Life. As always, before we dive into today's guest and conversation, I just want to take a moment and remind you how incredibly grateful and thankful we are to have you here with us today. We have a jam-packed episode and conversation, and I'm so excited and honored to be bringing today's guest to the show and to you. Joining me on The Superhuman Life this week is none other than Skylar Lewis. Skylar has built multiple multi-million dollar companies and has mastered the art of systemizing businesses. His book, The Two-Day CEO, describes his journey from being consumed in the business to creating an incredibly profitable company that is now run 100% by its employees. Skylar is the CEO of Superior Restoration and the founder and CEO of Rise Up Kings. Superior Restoration is an eight-figure company that is now ran by its employees. And at Rise Up Kings, Skylar teaches business owners how to scale their companies while staying balanced in their faith, family, and fitness. And in this episode, guys, we're going to unpack Skylar's personal journey of success and how his definition of success has evolved over the years. We're going to talk about the role and importance of embracing pain and discomfort and how it is essential for personal growth and success. And then we're going to get into how in today's modern world, it can be very challenging for men to actually lean into and embrace this pain. We're going to talk about the role and importance of having a clear vision and being able to articulate that to your team for effective and crucial leadership. And we're talking about how personal development can lead to personal transformation and growth. And then we're going to get into Rise Up Kings, the number one Christian-based personal development organization for business owners and entrepreneurs out there, and how Skylar and his team is helping business owners level up and live a life that ultimately glorifies God. Guys, this is a jam-packed episode. Make sure to bring a pen, paper, notes, ready to learn how to lean into pain, how to create a vision for your life, how to live a purpose-driven life. But before we get into that, guys, let me take a quick moment. And once again, thank you for joining us here at the Superhuman Life Podcast. If you want to continue to support what we're doing here so that we can level up and bring on even bigger name guest, even more quality content for all of you out there, we need your support in these two ways. First off, take a minute and leave us a five-star rating and written review wherever you're consuming today's episode. But more importantly, if somebody's going through some of the struggles that we unpack in today's conversation and you want to help them level up and break free from that glass ceiling that is holding them back to mediocrity, do us a favor and do them the blessing by sharing today's conversation. But without further ado, guys, let's get into today's episode with Skylar Lewis, how to rise up through pain to live a purpose-driven life. We love you guys. We'll see you on the other side. Skylar, talk to me about what most people don't understand about pain and how managing our relationship with pain plays a massive role in our success.
Yeah, man. Pain, we have a saying, pain is the path. And it's such, which we talk about at our events, but man, it's such a critical part of success, I believe, because many men strive for comfort in their lives. They're looking to find a way to hit retirement, hit a soft landing, to find the easiest path in business success, right? Wondering why is marriage so hard? Like they're always searching for comfort. And my thought is like he wasn't searching out comfort in his life. Yet why do we always search out comfort? Like, so pain really is the path. There's a verse to James 1:2, 3, and 4, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds. For you know the testing of your faith develops perseverance, and perseverance must finish its work so you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. So dude, the way to maturity, completeness, perseverance, like the good stuff in life is biblically through pain. And so I think it's so necessary. It's what's allowed me to create success. It's what's allowed me to continue to lean into my wife when it's hard, to allow me to break free from the addictions, the pretty serious addictions that I've had. So I'm grateful for all those things because it's also built a lot of perseverance. So I can handle more things than probably a lot of other guys could. And dude, life's hard. There's suffering in life. So the more you can have perseverance, the easier pain even becomes. Pain is really hard for someone that hasn't experienced pain. But if you've experienced a lot of pain, you can push through it.
Yeah, I love that. And we're definitely going to kind of pick apart your story here a little bit and kind of how you got into, you know, the level of success and the things that you're doing. And, you know, I'm glad you kind of opened up with just kind of some anecdotes there. You mentioned guys are kind of seeking comfort. You know, we're waiting towards retirement and we're working towards this easy kind of lifestyle. Do you think it's hard specifically in today's kind of modern world and culture for men to really embrace this pain and kind of lean into it with everything that's kind of at our disposal? We can push a button and really get anything we want. Do you think the world and society is working against the need for men to lean into the pain and discomfort?
Yeah, I think life's gotten a lot easier for men. You go back, right, 100 years, couple hundred years, what it took to even harvest your own food and to live a life was very difficult. So like, it was not easy, man. You're tilling the fields, you're planting seeds, you're waiting, you're going hunting, you're dragging the meat home. Like it was a freaking beast to survive. Now, I mean, yeah, we got a microwave. We've gotten very soft as a culture. And so I'm not like some hardcore masculine, like ultra extremist on certain things, but dude, there's so much power in the pain and being hardened to a certain extent. And so, yeah, I think our culture, it's just naturally evolved to making things easier. That's a part of progression, right? Progress means that you make things easier. And so like we're progressing, but as we're progressing, yeah, stuff's gotten so easy that it's creating so much depression within people because they can't handle the pain. The number one reason people go to the doctor is from anxiety and depression, right? Which is all leading to the way they look at life and the hard things that they're going through. So yeah, I definitely think our culture's on the wrong path, but it's a natural path too.
No, I agree with that. All of it, Skylar. For you, you've had massive success at a very, very young age. I know your first company, you know, you scaled it past 10 million. Now that all the things that you're doing with Rise Up Kings, was this something that you were taught early on, or did you have to learn to embrace this pain through your own trials and tribulations? Like, where did some of this insight come in your specific journey?
Yeah. So I grew up in a 700 square foot little mobile home deal. And so my parents were divorced. My mom was addicted to alcohol and a little bit bipolar, just very difficult. And so I grew up with a lot of insecurities too. And so I think I just naturally had a lot of challenges. And so I desired to create significance and really to prove myself. So I think that's where a lot of my ambition came from. I was naturally very ambitious, started my first like little business at 12 years old, and 13 and 14, I was doing website design. I was doing car audio installation. I mean, all kinds of stuff. As I dug in later on, I found out it was really to prove myself. I wanted to prove that I could be successful, which it can be effective, and then it can cause a lot of chaos in people's lives. But so I think that was where a lot of my ambition came from. And it was a school of hard knocks, man. I didn't have mentorship early on, so I just figured out how to grow, like how to do things. Like I got into sales early on. I got into marketing. I got into a network marketing company. Started talking to all my friends. So I early on started influencing people to come follow me and do things with me. I think that skill set really helped me, was joining a network marketing or multi-level marketing company when I was 16 years old.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, I've talked a lot about the direct sales industry. You know, it's not one that I've made a ton of money in, but the skill sets have carried over and been very, very transferable. Speaking of entrepreneurship, you mentioned, you know, starting your first business at 12. Do you think entrepreneurship is something that is innate within us? Like for you, you know, 12 years old, same thing with me. I was out there, you know, cutting grass, you know, mowing lawns, like whatever I could to kind of make a dollar very early on. And I've seen how those early lessons have carried into the business success that I've had here. Do you think that's something that is innate, or is that something that every person can develop? Can every person out there be an entrepreneur, in your opinion?
I don't think every person should be an entrepreneur. I think it would be great if they could be. There's so much value to it. And I don't think it's built in. I think creativity activity is built into human beings. So like God created us as creators, right? So we're like, we're designed to create things, to build things. And so we can do that through building someone else's company, or we can do that through building our own company. So I don't think everybody's built for the risk of entrepreneurship. Like I love it, but it's risky and it's stressful and it can be difficult. And so I don't think everybody's built for that. Some people prefer, are more risk averse. And so I'm a huge fan of entrepreneurship. I love entrepreneurship. I feel like it's the biggest personal development program out there is entrepreneurship and the struggles that come with it. So I don't think it's innate, but I think it can be learned. Basically, entrepreneurship is just a tool. It's a tool. It's a vehicle to get where you want to go and to create within that vehicle.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I love that saying. I do think it is the highest form of personal growth and self-development. What do you think? Because you said not everybody should be. So, you know, there's a young guy out there right now, maybe he's in his mid to late 20s and kind of figuring out, hey, this career thing that I've started on, it's like, it's not panning out the way that I thought it was going to be. What should some questions people should be asking themselves to determine if they fall into that small percentage of people that you believe should take the leap into entrepreneurship?
I think people need, I think one should ask like, hey, what's my risk tolerance? Do I want to put my money on the line personally? Like to do, so that's pretty important, right? Because entrepreneurship requires your own investment typically many times. So I think that's an important part of it. And then also, do you want to be responsible for other human beings, right? There's some people that love, some people are born to be more of, there's a couple, right? You have the entrepreneur, right? Then you have the artist, the person that just loves creating to create. Right. And so an artist typically won't always make the best entrepreneur. Sometimes they will. So you can learn those skills, but sometimes it depends on what would bring you the most fulfillment. Do you love creating in the marketplace, or do you love creating with some kind of art, right? Whatever your skill set is. So let's say you love building houses. Yes, you could build an entire company building houses and all the stress that comes with that. Or you could be a designer within somebody else's company and for the rest of your life, get fulfillment from designing and building houses within somebody else's umbrella. They get to deal with all the risk and the headaches of employees. So I think those are a couple things to consider. Like, what do you enjoy most? Do you enjoy creating opportunities for people, which is a benefit of entrepreneurship? Or do you enjoy the art of just creation itself and tying that into your skill set? So those are a couple thoughts that I have around that. I don't work with too many non-entrepreneurs, so I don't know. I'm like surrounded by entrepreneurs and like heavy in that space. So I have a hard time sometimes even relating to non-entrepreneurs because I do believe in entrepreneurship a lot. And again, I say it's not for everybody, but I think a lot of people can still dabble in it and still find some success and have some fun with it and take some risk without risking maybe everything that they have.
Yeah. So what are some of the patterns of characteristics or, consistent traits that you've seen being surrounded by so many entrepreneurs? Then, you mentioned risk tolerance, you mentioned creativity. What would be some of the key kind of innate characteristic traits that you've seen make a good entrepreneur? Get back to the show in a second, guys. But real quick, I want to tell you about today's sponsor, Magnesium Breakthrough by Bio-Optimizers. Do you know if you're getting enough magnesium? Because 4 out of 5 Americans aren't. And that's a big problem because magnesium is involved in more than 300 biochemical reactions in your body. Today, I want to talk to you about the most common signs to look for that could indicate you're magnesium deficient. Listen carefully to the end because there's going to be a special offer happening at the end of this that could be exactly what you need. Are you irritable or anxious? Do you struggle with insomnia? Do you experience muscle cramps or twitches? Do you have high blood pressure? Are you sometimes constipated? There are dozens of symptoms of magnesium deficiency, but these are just a few of the most common ones. Now, here's what most people don't know. Taking just any magnesium supplement won't solve your problem because most supplements use the cheapest kinds that your body can't use or absorb. That's why I exclusively recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Bio-Optimizer. It's the only full-spectrum magnesium supplement with 7 unique forms of magnesium that your body can actually use and absorb. All Bio-Optimizer supplements are the best in class, guys. I've been working with and using their products for over 7 years now. For some reason, you feel differently, you can get a full refund, no questions asked. They're so confident in this that they're going to offer 365-day money-back guarantee. Just go to biooptimizers.com/frankrich. And in addition, we're going to give you a discount if you use code RICH10 for 10% off. Once again, guys, visit biooptimizers.com/frankrich or click the link down there in the show notes and use code RICH10 to receive 10% off your order today.
Good. I think the willingness to fail is a pretty important one. Like the most successful people that I've found are willing to put themselves out there and willing to risk themselves. And so I, like early on in my entrepreneurship, like I created my first $1 million business when I was 23, and then scaled that. But to get to that point, I had to try a lot of things. So I tried multiple businesses. I tried a lot of stuff and found out what worked and what didn't. So I think the willingness to fail, I think the skill set of iteration is really important. So to be able to iterate over and over and test new things, I think the willingness to have some tough skin, to be able to handle some pain, and then the desire to truly lead other people well, right? Because you can be in business for yourself or you can be in business to serve also. So I think the willingness to serve other people is a really important trait. And then I think the ability to influence other people is really important. So your ability to get other people to buy into your vision is critical for entrepreneurship. Yeah, I think those are solid. Those are a solid group of skill sets, traits that could make somebody successful in business. And also the desire to learn and grow, right? Because what happens is to be successful, like you really need to focus on developing yourself. And as you develop yourself, you're able to develop other leaders and other people want to follow you. I think what's really helped is I've been able to hire the highest level talent. I mean, my coaches at our events, dude, I got an ex NFL player. I have one of the top Green Berets that trained Green Berets across the country. I have special forces guys. I have just incredible. I mean, I got a guy, Joel Neeb. He just sold a $60 billion company. There's incredible people that are following me that are actually like, which is pretty incredible. I was just a little dorky kid with glasses and like struggling with pornography at 16. Like I was nobody. And now I got to pretty powerful people that are following me because I've put so much time developing my skill sets, developing my reading, learning, going to seminars, just working on myself. I think that's really important to be successful is because people will only follow people that they respect. So if you're not respectable, like, and again, if you're overweight and struggling with being overweight, like a guy that's really on point and physically fit is going to have a hard time respecting you. Like that's one thing. Okay. If you're struggling with bad behavior, poor behaviors with like drinking too much or partying hardcore, and you got a solid Christian entrepreneur that's underneath you or that wants to work with you, he may not follow you. So like, as we level up, we can attract the top level talent out there. And when you have the top level talent, dude, business becomes much more streamlined and effective.
And it starts with walking the walk, like being an example of the type of people that you're trying to attract. I love that. What's your definition of success? Like, how do you define success today? And how has that changed and kind of evolved over time?
That's a good question. It was cool. I was, so we have 16, we just moved to Dallas from California about 3 years, a little under 3 years ago. That was a great move, man. California, highest state income tax in the country. Yeah, highest state income tax in the country. It's kind of a mess out there. And so we're in Dallas. We're loving Texas. So we got 16 acres out here. I moved my mom into a tiny home on the property. We have a big old house. I moved my grandma, my sister, and my two nephews on the property. Got them a manufactured house on the property. But eventually move my other steps. Yeah. Anyway, I got big plans. We're building the compound. And I was walking with my 95-year-old grandma down. We built like a whole, I put them as far as I could on the property, by the way. Like I'm on one side, I've literally as far as I could. And so we built this cool concrete pathway all the way down there, like right by the sport court that we just finished. And I'm walking with my 95-year-old grandma, Mary, and I have her in my arm. And we're like walking down as like the sun's like setting. And she's like, Skylar, I'm so proud of how successful you are. And I'm like, oh, that's sweet. I'm just kind of thinking about that. And then and in my head, I'm like, actually, like all that stuff that she thinks is cool and successful, I'm like, this is actually true success right here. Like I'm walking with my 95-year-old grandma. They're on the property. We're just cruising. We have a great relationship. I'm like, dude, at the end of the day, like that, I literally thought that thought, like, this is success right here. And so I think that's my definition of success now, is really close relationships. Before, it was success was having the nice things, having the cool things, having a bunch of friends. Like basically success to me was a way I could prove that I was worthy. Now I'm like, I see success as just being in relationship with people. So success before was being able to prove myself, and whatever means proved myself to the outside world, I felt successful. If they looked at me and said, you're successful, that's when I felt successful. So my grandma saying, Skylar, you're successful. I didn't feel successful when she said that. So now, like, the outside world telling me I'm successful, I could care less.
Yeah. I'm sure that had to happen though, by you hitting some of those milestones, right? Getting to the top, you know, chasing all the things that you thought were going to be successful, right? And then you look at the bank account, it's higher than you ever possibly imagined. You have all the cars, the watches, the money, the suits, like disposable income. You can travel the world, do whatever it is you want to do. Was there a defining moment? Like, was there a moment in time when you were there at the top of the mountain, you kind of had this revelation or this realization, awakening moment, like, this isn't what success is? Can you kind of walk up? Was there that moment? And if so, can you kind of, you know, explain kind of how you were processing and dealing with that in real time?
That's good. Yeah, it was December 2014. We had just moved to a place in Temecula called La Cresta. It's like a beautiful area, 5-acre property, big house, kind of our dream house, actually. We just had our first son. And I got the P&L statement from our business, and Jessica's like, hey, come in and look at the P&L. She pulled up QuickBooks, and on the bottom, right, our net profit was 1.4. I was 27. Our net profit was $1.4 million. And I'm like, holy crap, that's a lot for this year, right? And we ended up paying $700,000 in taxes, California, crazy income tax, 50%, 53%. And so, but at that moment, I thought I would feel excited. I didn't. I felt this weird feeling, dude. It actually sent me into a funk. And because I had achieved the goals that I thought would make me happy, and then they ended up not making me happy. And so I just went into like a self kind of cocooning moment, went into doing some self-discovery. I mean, it kind of jacked me up. I stopped showing up to the office. I stopped doing a lot of things because I had reached that goal. I realized that I had been searching for significance, like to prove myself on that journey. And so I later on started doing digging and realized that the best way to operate, the best underlying aim, is not to prove I'm worthy. And again, most entrepreneurs have that inside of them. The best underlying aim I've found is to live on purpose, is to find out what your purpose is and to have that be the aim of serving and living within your purpose. So I think that was the moment where I realized the nice, like, it's less about the things. It's more about me living for what God designed me to be doing.
Yeah. And how have you noticed that mindset approach changing even the old version of success, right? Like, once you kind of stopped focusing on the wealth, the material, the acquisition, like, have you seen an increase in your business productivity and the top and bottom lines of the company? Like, have you produced more success since having this new mindset?
Yeah, not initially. So not initially. It was interesting. So I wish it could have been, but no, we, after that point, our income actually went down like every year for like the next four years, 5 years. It was because there was a couple of reasons why. One is I fired our top guy that had lied to me. And I told myself I won't ever have anybody that I can't trust on my team. So he was our number one producer, brought all the income in, like, was responsible for almost all the results. I literally let him go because he lied about being somewhere where he wasn't. And so that jacked us up. However, what it did do is my whole life changed. I was more stressed at that moment in 2014. I was anxious. I was selfish, very selfish. Like I was using people to get where I wanted to go. Like, my employees were a means to an end. They were a tool. They were a tool for me to get my success that I wanted. And so it really shifted my whole perspective. And I started to treat them like humans. I started to set goals with all my team members. Like, I really started to focus on them, and it completely changed our culture. It made the business more enjoyable. It created a lot of really positive things. And now our success is exponential compared to what that was. But it took me a minute to learn how to operate to operate differently. I didn't shift operating that way. Like, it took me a couple of years to really shift to be more outward focused and truly care about all of my team and to live a purpose-driven life.
Was there ever a moment in that first couple of years for you initially, like, where you contemplated, like, did we make the right decision? Like, you know, can I go back to the old way of thinking? You mentioned, you know, income dropping for multiple years. Like, how did you stay the course? How did you stay online? How did you continue to go that path, knowing that the older way was producing, you know, 1.4 million, you know, in revenue? Like, was there struggles in those first couple of years for you, and how'd you you know, stay the course?
I never thought about going back, but it was definitely hard managing a drop in income for sure. And so what kept me in the game was my responsibilities, right? I had a son, I had my wife, I had everything we had built. So I had a lot of responsibilities. So I kind of put my head down. We were still making good money, but the income, right, obviously dropped. And so there's a verse, Romans 8:28, in all things, God works out everything for the good of those that love him, who have been called according to his purpose. So he's going to work it all out for the good. So from that moment, from that difficult time, I learned how to run my business better. They say a rising tide, right, rises all boats. And so, like, the economy is doing great, stuff's rocking during that time. And so I was creating success easy. And then when it got hard, I had to learn really how to operate a business, really how to build executive teams, build processes, build systems. Like, it forced me to build an exceptional business, when before it was just a money-making, cash-flowing machine, but it was really not that good of a business. And so now when I run businesses now, we build them really well. And it was probably, now that I'm thinking about that, from that moment, from that valley, that I learned and forced myself to learn how to run a great business.
Yeah, that's great. From the research I did on you, I know scaling and systems is one of your zones of expertise. And that's why you've been able to duplicate the business success that you've had. I think you even wrote a book called The 2-Day CEO, where you'd reached a point where you're doing, you know, eight figures in revenue working 2 days a week. What do most business owners, entrepreneurs have wrong about systems in an organization and the role that plays in ultimately scaling, getting you out from working in the business and more on the business?
Yeah, so it was interesting. So we had built the business to about 8 million, and it's a construction company. We were in the restoration space. And so it was it's a challenging business. I mean, 24/7, it's on call, dealing with construction guys. It's a construction business and technician. It's challenging. And so built it. I went to 5 days, then to 4 days, then to 3 days a week. And then I got to 2 days. I actually moved away. I moved an hour away to the beach, to Newport Beach. And then I was working 2 days a week. And then I'm like, you know what? If I'm doing 2 days, I bet I could go to 1 day. And so I went to 1 day, and then I moved to Texas. So I moved to Texas, and then I ended up going to a couple hours a week. And our business profit increased every year. The more I stepped out, the more the business profitability increased, which was really interesting. And so I think a couple of key things that entrepreneurs need to do, like, A, you got to, dude, release some freaking control. Well, first, get some processes in place. Like, what does that mean? It means anything that you do more than once, if an email goes out more than once, if a certain thing that you do, like, find a way to build it into a process. Like, as an example, Rise Up Kings, we have our events here. We do a lot of activities. We drive guys all around the city. We do all kinds of crazy stuff. So I have, like, bins labeled. We have checklists for everything. Like, everything is systemized through the whole event. So, like, everybody knows what they're doing. I mean, we have pre-meeting agendas. Like, it's all planned out, all systemized. So it's just the way – so the more we can pull that into our business, the easier business becomes, where we're not relying on people, we're relying on process. Process is much more reliable than relying on people to remember to do things. And so I think being a process-driven person is a key thing that entrepreneurs need to do. And then I think another piece of advice that I would give is hiring a number two. A number two was the best thing that I ever did. So it's my right-hand person, the person that I had, because most entrepreneurs are visionary, right? They have a vision, but we need someone to go help us execute on stuff. So I've always had number twos. One of the first things I did when I started Rise Up Kings, I found a solid, operationally sound person that could help me execute and catch all the details of everything. So, like, this lady's Jessica, her name's Jessica, freaking amazing. Same thing with Stephanie. Stephanie is the VP of operations at Superior, handles everything, lawsuits, She I don't even manage the lawsuits or issues. She manages every single thing in the entire business. So nothing, I mean, all I manage is a weekly meeting with the executive team. So I think having that right-hand solid person, dude, is such a core piece of this process of starting to be able to have freedom in your business versus the business really owning you.
Yeah. Is there an ideal time or even too early of a time where you can bring that person on? We're speaking maybe to the startup entrepreneur, not the person that has maybe had initial success. Now they're launching company number two. Like, this is company number one. You know, is it you hit your first 100K? Is it you hit your first 100K month? Is it your first million? At what point in a first business venture do you look at bringing on that operator? Because I'm sure as the entrepreneur, like, you need to know a lot of this stuff. Or would you agree with that? So at what stage do you bring that person on board?
It depends on the industry, but I bring them in as soon as humanly possible. It depends on how much capital you have also. So basically what's going to happen is you're going to either need to have more time investment or more capital investment in your business. So if you have capital, you can go hire really good talented people right away to help scale. If you don't have capital, you're going to be doing all the work and learning everything and doing that stuff until you can get the capital to hire that right-hand person. But for most people, you just have to figure out, if you're an entrepreneur, let's say you're 100K, 500K, a million in revenue, you just got to figure out what stuff do you want to get off your plate. And as soon as you can hire someone to get that stuff off your plate, the stuff that's not making you the most money. So the first thing I do when I bring on a coaching client, and so I have a guy who runs a $30 million construction company. And the first thing I do when we're talking is I build out a spreadsheet and I say, hey, I want you to put down every single thing that you do, write everything that you do. And I want you to write on the column right next to it, are you going to delete it? Are you going to delegate it? Or are you going to keep it yourself? Delete, delegate, or keep? And so they have to go through everything that they do and they have to write down, like, cool, here's the chunk. Here's these 10 tasks that take up my time that are not my highest and best use. What role would that be, the person that would take all that stuff? And so as soon as you can do that, as soon as you can afford to bring somebody on to take a majority of the tasks off your plate, do it. So if you're doing QuickBooks, if you're doing bookkeeping, find a way to get that off. Like, all that stuff, like, most a CEO's, his highest and best use is not bookkeeping. His highest and best use is not customer service. His highest and best use is not going to be sometimes doing the sales. Sometimes it will be doing the sales. But as soon as you can get that stuff off your plate, the more you can work on the things that will produce the most value for your company. And that's whether you're a 500K a year CEO or a $50 million a year CEO. It's the same exact thing. But like, how do we elevate you up to where you're not doing, like, and what I usually do is I have them calculate what their hourly rate is worth. So, like, hey, what's your income this year? And then what's your hourly rate, right? If you're making 100 grand a year, your hourly rate, 100 grand divided by 2080 is $48 an hour. So basically you should be doing nothing under $48 an hour, which you can find most roles to do everything. So do not build the desks at your office. Do not do all this random stuff, dude. Hire a handyman, hire other people to do this stuff. We need you working on the highest, most efficient, most valuable things in the organization. Like, that's my focus with people that I'm coaching or training. And so I think we could all do a better job of that. Like, even now, I have two executive assistants. I just hired my second one last week because I'm like, I still have so much stuff that I have to do that is still ending up on my plate. So I'm like, how the heck do I? But I'm in a position where I can do that. But in the beginning, maybe it's hiring an assistant just to help with stuff. Help with the Amazon boxes, cut them up, throwing them in the trash, like, whatever that looks like.
I love the assigning of the hourly rate. I had a mentor that kind of walked us through that as well. And it's like, anything, even outside of the business, like things in your personal life, if you can find somebody to take the dry cleaning, clean the home, cut the yard, like all these little bits, like open up hours here, hours there. And it's like, the more that you can be focused on what, you know, would be the high productivity actions, right? The ones that are really going to move the business forward, working on it versus in it, right? Not the day-to-day stuff, like you said, customer service, bookkeeping, all that stuff. Like, easy to find EAs now. I mean, $5-$10 an hour, you know, online digital for a lot of that stuff.
What would you say, what's your next role that you're able to hire or would take you to the next level if you brought this person on?
I think for us, it's sales. So our business is high ticket coaching. So both somebody managing a lot of the incoming of leads, and then actually the sales process as well. I still love doing the vast majority of the coaching. It's my biggest passion, even if it's not going to be the highest producing thing that I spend my time on. Like, I love being in the trenches with the men. But if we can begin to find somebody that's going to handle a lot of that lead inflow and even the follow-up stuff with guys that have, like, maybe we've had calls, consultations with. So more lead management and kind of sales focus is where we're looking at right now. A lot of our back end organization, admin, production, video editing, all that stuff has kind of been off my plate for a very, very long time. I still manage a vast majority of the front end side of the business. But yeah, looking at sales and I guess you'd call it lead management would be where we're looking at right now.
It's cool. I love it, man. I love just brainstorming that stuff. It's like, that's the key, because how do we get to the next level? And it's typically by hiring that right person, like a key and an A player, right? Hiring an A player, ideally an A player. And again, in the beginning, when people are starting out, A players, they might not be able to afford them, but sometimes you can find a diamond in the rough, like a really sharp person that's undervalued. And then when you get to utilize them and work with them, you realize, oh, wow, this person's very valuable. And then you can increase their pay as time goes on. But that A player, like, and just a little side note, finding a high capacity person. I've been really focused on this word of high capacity idea. There's some people that are average capacity where they can kind of handle an average amount of things. But there's a group of people that can usually do double the amount of work of another human being. I find that with accounting, like, I've had multiple accounting people, the next hire I hire, they're doing way more than the other person. I'm like, how the heck are they doing that? And then the next person is doing more than all of them. I'm like, wow, this is so crazy. Like, social media manager, right? You might have one guy that can only produce so many posts. You get another guy that's doubling the volume of another guy. It's like, so finding high capacity human beings is a really important part of the process.
What role does vision and being able to paint a clear vision and being able to paint a vision big enough where those high capacity individuals can see their vision fitting within your own vision, right? Like you mentioned, hey, you got 15 acres now. You already got partial of the family there, but you're already thinking like the next step, one day having the entire family there. I'm sure in bringing in some of these eight players, like, they need to be able to see where their expertise, their skill set, and even their vision of what they want in the future 5-10 years fits into what you do. So speak to vision and the importance of being able to paint a clear vision, both for yourself, but then also in bringing on those team members.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we've all heard the verse, where there is no vision, the people will perish. So I think the vision is so critical. And what happens is if you don't have a big vision, well, you got to have two things. You got to have vision. You got to have execution. So if you don't have a big vision, people won't come join you. So I'm able to hire and bring on some really talented people because I do have a big vision. They're tied into the vision of like what we're going to go do and the impact we're going to have. If I didn't have that, I wouldn't have these guys. They would be doing their own thing. Honestly, I pulled them from doing their own thing. So I pulled entrepreneurs to come work for me. So it's like, well, I got to have a good vision. That's one. Like, having a big vision is the CEO's role. So a lot of people don't even have clarity around their vision. So if there's people listening, it's like, dude, you got to go get away for a day. Take a day and go out on in the nature, go do something and go bring a journal and write out like what you want your future to look like and what you want in a year or 5 or 10 years and write that out. Like, I do that every year. I love that vision dreaming process. And then, so that's one thing, like getting clear on the vision. And then the second thing is being able to articulate. So sharing the vision with your team. Sometimes I have to remember to do that. But like, if you have a team, share the vision, like share where they're going. Hey guys, I'm super excited. We're on our path to impacting these people. We're doing this. Like, sharing the vision with them is really critical. And then the third part of it is being able to execute on it, because that's truly what makes a great leader. I was watching Napoleon, the movie. And that guy had a vision for execution with his battles that he won, but then he executed really well. And so I think execution's important. A lot of people have talk a big game, but dude, they don't go actually take action on all that stuff. So I think vision and execution is critical. You can have good executors, but as a CEO, I think you have to stay good at executing at things and not just handing everything off. Like, be a good executor. Like, if you have a vision, dude, take action. Stop talking about it. Take action. Your team's watching.
I love that. I want to transition and talk about Rise Up Kings and all the work that you're doing with Christian businessmen and entrepreneurship. You mentioned you scaled, had this restoration construction company, got it past 8 figures. move to Texas, and then you transition and you get into this men's coaching space for Christian entrepreneurs. What hole in the marketplace did you identify that you were coming to fulfill? And what did that look like in those early days of going from the restoration construction to more of the events, experience, coaching industry?
Yeah, I've always loved getting people together. Like, it's one of my favorite things to do is like getting guys together. So I've always launched like Bible studies and like got the first grade dads together and my sons. Like, I love creating community. It's super fun for me. But what I went on a journey, man, of struggling I had some big struggles. I struggled with pornography, found my first porn magazine when I was 12 years old, dude, and became like addicted. It was up in a treehouse. Became addicted ever since that moment. And so like breaking free has been a journey, like a long freaking journey. And so that journey plus me, I ended up cheating on my now wife. We were dating. I ended up cheating on her before we got together, like before we got married, shared that with her. That created a lot of trauma and issues in our marriage. We're better because of it, but dude, that was a journey. So I went on a path of doing a lot of, deep personal development work. And as I was doing a lot of getting coaching myself, going to seminars, I went to a lot of personal development seminars, and I saw there was some big gaps. Like people were walking away from their faith and joining kind of new age spirituality, and they were missing Christ. And like, so we were running a large personal development company, one of the largest in the country actually. And we walked away because I felt convicted. I'm like, dude, and there was some good work that they were doing. Like, people were getting healed, like traumas broken free from, like really good stuff. But then I'm like, dude, if people are walking away from God, because they're like, oh, I'm healed now, I'm good. I'm like, I wouldn't be. So we left. We left that. We just walked away. And I'm like, okay, someday I'm going to help men level up and live a life that glorifies God, like become free, step into new levels, new mentalities, new mindsets, new processes, new ways of operating. And so then that's when it was about 4 years ago, I launched Rise Up Kings, ran our first event, and then, dude, like God blessed it and just continued that journey of creating transformations. You're in a similar space, right? You love seeing people change and transform. It's super powerful. There's nothing better than being involved in that. So I feel specifically called to work with Christian business owners. We have non-business owner events, but like helping them do just like, because I had done so much work. I've spent time with Tony Robbins. I've spent time with a ton of people, and I've synthesized a lot of information and then put it together into a place where, like, if people come to this event, like their lives will be forever changed, like totally transformed. It's like a proven process. Now I'm just scaling. We have 50 events lined up this year, so I'm scaling it right now. Our goal is to get to 100 and to reach 10,000 guys. So yeah, I'm kind of on that mission of living on purpose. I talked about purpose earlier. Like, this is why God created me. This is what I was designed to be doing. And so now I just got to maximize that.
Yeah. Did you mentioned being in the personal development space and it was taking people away from God. I think, you know, a lot of Christians or believers would even say, well, you find God, you know, in church, in the Bible. Like, we don't need to hire a coach or we don't need to join a mastermind to get that. You know, for me, it was, my journey started coming to my faith. So I think I'm probably had a little bit different of a journey. I didn't have a relationship with Christ prior to being 35 years old, and the world kind of led me astray. And I realized by being around some really strong Christian influential men that, hey, you can have all the business success, you can have all that, and you can still have a strong relationship with the Creator. You can still have a strong relationship with Christ. And that was the beginning journey for me, unpacking myself, getting clear, getting free of pornography. And then when I got on the other side of my addiction, I said, well, for one, this is 2019. There wasn't a lot of people talking about it. And also there wasn't a lot of resources for help. The church is doing a horrible job. You know, 70% of active Christian men are struggling with pornography addiction. Over 50% of the pastors are struggling with it, about 7% of the churches. So I saw, as a businessman, an opportunity, but more a gap in the marketplace. Like, it wasn't about making money. It was about fulfilling the need that the church wasn't solving. And I've been very open about, hey, like, we're here not to replace the church. We're to support it. But until they start solving it, we're going to be here fixing it. Did you see a similar thing, like in the business personal development space, absent of the church, that like, we really need something outside of here that is really going to help these guys break through and level up in what you're doing with them?
Yeah, no, there's a big gap there, right? There, so we run what's called experiential training. So we do like a pretty profound I was involved with some personal development organizations. I did experiential learning, experiential training. So it's not teaching. So we're not teaching up on stage. They're doing like these really profound experiences that create the transformation like over and over and over again. And so we, so I was involved in a lot of that and it was super powerful, but I saw a big gap. Like where do Christians go if they want to level up outside of the church, right? They're still going to go to the church, but they're like, hey, where can I go for personal development, right? Where can I go to level up like in some of these other areas? Where can I go to be a better husband, a better business owner, where can I go to heal some of this trauma? Like, there's no cool, awesome, like Christian personal development seminar series that are out there. Like there's a very small amount of them. And so I saw a big gap in that. And that's where our expertise was, is in that space. And so that's when we're like, okay, cool. It's time to go serve Christians, specifically help them level up. And so, yeah, that was a big gap that we saw. And so I think we're the largest right now Christian-based personal development organization that like runs these events in the country. I haven't found one larger. So it's been cool. Like there's a big need for it. There's a big need because again, they're tired of kind of the new age stuff that's a little bit confusing. And so when you don't know, you might go to a personal development seminar and then all of a sudden they're doing this woo-woo stuff and it's like, oh crap. You know, I don't want to go into this weird place and do these kind of unusual meditations. And like, I don't know where it's going to take me from a spiritual place. Like, I'm really protective over what I put into my mind. So like, I can't trust a lot of other places. I'm really cautious. That's kind of where we found our footing and just where we believe we're best able to serve the kingdom.
Talk to us a little bit about, you know, obviously we want to point to guys that are interested in maybe going a little bit deeper. Guys, we'll have all of Skylar and Rise Up Kings links down there in the show notes below. But talk to us a little bit about what Rise Up Kings is. You mentioned 50 events, experiential, not, you know, speaking from a stage. I know you have your four pillars and then kind of your six keys. So kind of walk us through like the 30,000 overfoot view of what it is you guys do with Rise Up Kings.
Yeah. So we're the largest community right now of Christian entrepreneurs, and not everybody's entrepreneurs. We have something called the Awakening for Non-Business Owners and the Crucible for Gen Z guys, 18, 26 year olds, but we are a four pillar men. So we have about 400 people inside of it. We had about 1500 graduates in the last 3-ish years and about 400 people in our mastermind group. But these are all four pillar dudes. So they go to a three-day event. We have one running right now. We got 18 entrepreneur CEOs here. And they go to this three-day event and then we do deep transformational work. So we add faith, family, fitness, and finance components into it. We do a bunch of experiences, like huge breakthroughs happen. And then once that event happens, they have an opportunity to join our mastermind. And then inside of our mastermind, we have an app that's built like a legit app where they're tracking their points every day. They're investing in their marriage. They're investing in their faith. They're investing in their fitness. There's a whole process built out and we have weekly calls similar to some of the mastermind stuff that you do. And so we just have this big community of Christian dudes that are like leveling up in the four pillars and learning a ton of business stuff, entrepreneur stuff. And then we have a bunch of series of events. We have a 3-day, we have a 5-day, we have a marriage event. We have an international marriage event. We have my wife takes all the wives on a journey alongside the husbands, and then they're growing together. Like as couples, they're leveling up together. That was also a big gap that we saw is the men were leveling up, but then they're like, dude, my wife's stagnant. So it's like, it was actually causing issues in the marriage. So I'm like, hey, babe, we got to tag you in to come help and really walk alongside these women through her event series. So that's kind of our process.
Yeah, I love that. We've seen not a lot of it, but we've seen cases where, you know, guys get into this growth-centric mindset and they're all about chasing, you know, leveling up. And like if the other person in the relationship doesn't have that same worldview, like if they're more fixed in your growth, it's like you're gonna grow further and further away. So I love that your wife has the support and you can bring the wives on board with that. That's something I haven't seen many places where it's like, no, we're doing this together. As a couple, we're going to do it separate because men need something different than women need something different, but we're focused on working towards that same vision, working towards that same goal. And we're buying into the same belief that we aren't fixed. We can grow, we can evolve, we can level up. What has this done for you? Like what's the unexpected maybe benefit that you've seen, whether it's in your personal life, in your relationship, just out of being at the top of an organization that has led thousands of men through transformation? Like what has Skylar gotten out of it that maybe you didn't think you were going to get when you started?
It's cool. I'm sitting in our new studio. We just built a 15,000 square foot building, which is pretty cool. That's like a surface level answer, but I'm enjoying it. It's pretty fun. So well, really what I've got at adding out of it, dude, is I think when as we lead other people, it causes us to have to level up. So I've personally become a better man of faith, like much, much stronger than I was 4 years ago. I'm much more confident, more grounded, right? If I'm leading, right, special forces guys. And so like it's caused me to have to really like level up how I show up, my integrity, my word. Who I am and my character is leveled up tremendously from leading a bunch of other men. Cause I don't want to be hypocritical. I grew up in a hypocritical household. So I don't want to be preaching what I'm not actually living out. And so like I've leveled up tremendously in the last 4 years. Like I'm a different dude than I was 4 years ago. So I think that's probably one of the coolest benefits like a selfish benefit that I've gotten out of this whole process.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. And it's exactly kind of what I was looking for was that selfish, answer and response. So I appreciate that. What's next, man? You know, you mentioned you're already the biggest, you know, you're 15 acres, 15,000 square foot, brand new facility, men, women, you know, I'm sure the organization is scaling kind of on its own at this point. What's next and what are you most excited about? You know, with the rest of 2024 and beyond.
Yeah, well, something we're working on. We just shot some episodes. We're launching the Christian Business Mentor podcast, so CBM, and so I'm super excited about that. Like specifically, that's my jam. Like I know scaling, I know business, I know that stuff super well, and so I'm going to be leading more Christian men and helping them build like pretty successful businesses through that. So that's one thing that's I'm really excited about, and then. The other part is we're bringing on. We just sent an offer out to a COO, really high level guy, to help us expand across the country. So it's our goal to really be the most known organization for Christian based personal development within the church. So if it's, and anybody that goes to church, if they're at a charismatic or if they're at a Christian church and they think of personal development, Rise Up Kings or Rise Up Queens comes to mind. So I've chosen this year to reinvest all of our profits. So we're not taking any money from the business. We're reinvesting everything back into it to see if we can exponentially make a bigger impact than what we have. So that's our big focus right now. So I'm not working 2 days a week right now. Like I'm in it pretty hardcore right now. Someday I'll move my way back, but I love this stuff.
Scott, I've enjoyed this a lot, man. This has been a great conversation. Tell the guys out there where the best place is to connect with you. If they're interested in Rise Up Kings, where can they find more information about that? You mentioned having an event coming out right now, but 50 next year. When's the next one coming up? This will be dropping, you know, mid-April here, not too far from the time that we're recording. So yeah, anything kind of on the early deck horizon there, and then the best place to connect with you and learn more about the things that you guys are doing. And then we'll wrap it up with our last and final question.
Cool. Sounds good. Yeah. I got my book, The 2-Day CEO. It's on Amazon. I share a lot of the business advice on there. Pretty cool story too. And then Rise Up Kings. Yeah. RiseUpKings.com. Or on Instagram. And then we have events for business owners and non-business owners. So we got usually about one a month for those events. And then, yeah, you can follow me on Instagram too. Just Skylar, Skylar Lewis, Lewis. But we have an organization, it's our nonprofit called Ruck Ministries, where we actually do this for pastors. So we're helping pastors gain freedom for free. So if they're referred by a Ruck guy, like we actually will put on the same event that's $3,000 or $5,500, but for free many times for pastors, because we want to see that same hardness, the same power. We want to see pastors showing up with more dude, like showing up like strong men versus the softness that's kind of permeated our churches.
Yeah, the feminization of Christianity, like my good friend Josh Cachadorian kind of coined that term. That's amazing. Where do we learn more about the ministry side of things?
Oh, just Ruck Ministries, RUKMinistries.com, specifically for pastors.
Yeah, no, incredible. Guys out there, share that with your pastor, share that with your church leaders. And for those of you that out there that are running ministries, get plugged in. You know, if you need to level up and bring some of this back to your church, Skylar's going to be the man to get you there. So guys, it's been amazing. Guys, make sure to connect, follow Skylar, check out Rise Up Kings, check out the podcast and everything that he's doing. Last question here, Skylar, the title of our show is called The Superman Life. you know, for me, this has kind of been a 5-year kind of exploratory journey of me figuring out what that means to me. And you mentioned purpose at the beginning of the call. I, you know, as a man of faith, I do believe that we're all put here for a purpose. I think a lot of people stop there though. Like, yeah, God has a purpose for my life. They don't take the intentionality of like the development of those skills that are going to bring that purpose to the world and service of others. So I think when you take knowing your purpose and then the clear execution and action every single day to grow in that purpose, and then you share that with the world. To me, that's living a superhuman life, but I love to always get the guest take. So Skylar Lewis of Rise Up Kings, as we close out today's conversation, how would you define living a superhuman life?
A superhuman life. I would say that living a superhuman life would be living an outward focused life of impact, of positive impact. So where your mission is to inspire and positively impact those people around you, whether it be your employees, whether it be your kids, your wife, the person at the grocery store, like truly living an intentional life where you're maximizing the gifts that God's given you to positively impact people, and ideally for the kingdom, but at least do leaving people better than you found them. So I think that would be superhuman to me.
Incredible. Nothing to add there, guys. Guys, make sure to check out Skylar, Rise Up Kings. If you're getting value out of these episodes, you know we ask you every single week to continue to support us. We love those 5-star ratings and written reviews. Helps us continue to bring on amazing guests just like Skylar. But more importantly, if a man is struggling with some of the things we talked about, maybe finding his purpose, leveling up, do us the favor and him the blessing by sharing today's conversation with him. But for Skylar, your host, Coach Frank Rich, we love you guys. We'll see you next week.